You've just tuned into North Fork Works on WPKN Radio, and I'm Hazel Kahn. My guest today is Beth Young, veteran journalist and founder owner of East End Beacon, one of my most trusted sources for area news online and as a monthly print newspaper. I'm always interested, Beth, in what you see as you roam our neighborhoods, the Twin Forks, and report what you see, not only as it happens, but you always give us also some kind of historical context over the past decade or so to show how things have changed. I'm very happy to welcome you again to North Fork Works, Beth.
I'm very glad to be back.
Today, I want to go back to an interview on North Fork Works last October, just after your granddaughter was born. In that conversation, you talked about how different would be the North Fork that she grows up in compared to that you, as a 13th generation member of a North Fork founding family, had called home. What you told our audience less than a year ago was part lament and part hard-nosed reality. So I wanted to talk to you again to see if you were observing some of the positive developments I've noticed recently. It's not that extreme construction activity, either actual or planned or proposed, has in any way abated. But what I've been seeing, and here, full disclosure, I'm also part of an advocacy group called Save Matatuck Inlet. So that might be, you know, affecting some of my perspective. Mm-hmm. But I see vigorous response, organized and forceful, of collaboration and pushback among the residents of our North Fork town, of and maybe both Twin Forks, you tell me. So I see this as an emergent, as an antidote, with some of the energy coming from the very newer, the COVID fleeing residents, who we were all so angry about when they came from New York and other urban centers, and were so alarmed by them over the past 2 years. I just wonder what you're seeing.
As we know, and I guess much of the New York suburbs and exurbs have faced since the pandemic, is this real extreme turnover in properties, increase in property selling prices, increased traffic, increased number of people here, increased need for all kinds of local services. You know, it was at a fever pitch for the past 2 years. It's calm down is, well, I don't know if interest rates are even driving what's calming it down, because I'm sure there were a lot of cash buyers involved. But there was a lot of anger for a couple of years now. And there was also the town services were overwhelmed. And certainly like applications before the town's building department and the planning board and the zoning board has kept them really busier than they've ever been. I drive for Uber on the weekends, and it's funny. I'll be driving people from out of town down these little side streets in Southold, and you'll see the houses on the street look like a mouthful of chipped teeth, like, you know, one broken tooth here and one there, like with these tiny little houses, and then a McMansion being built right next door to it, and then another little cottage that's been there for 100 years or more, and then another McMansion. And people in the car always say to me, "You have the weirdest style of building around here. I don't understand it." And I wouldn't call it a style, it's a lack of planning. No rural area can really be faulted for not seeing this coming, but the South Fork faced this years ago, and a lot of the towns there put in and villages put into effect these laws limiting the size of houses. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that's on the town's agenda for now, and it's been in the works seriously for more than a year, but it's needed to happen for longer than that.
So the size of house is an absolute measure, as well as relative to the size of the plot, of the parcel.
Right. Mm-hmm. So on a quarter acre lot, you could build a house of up to 2,100 square feet if this new rule is passed. And it may be up for a vote as soon as next Tuesday, July 5th, which I guess is probably when mm-hmm. airing. So this may be a done deal by the time you hear this. Mm. That's one of the big things that's in the works. But I do have to say that there weren't always a lot of civic associations on the North Fork, and there were on the South Fork. On the South Fork, there are civic associations. There are citizens advisory committees, which are like little hamlet groups that advise the town on issues that face their neighborhoods. They're kind of like civic associations, but they're sponsored by the town. So if they have a falling out, they wouldn't go and sue the town, whereas a civic association might. But we don't have those here up on the North Fork. And in past years, there was a very active group, the Orion Association. East Marion Community Association became very active. I guess they became active in response to a proposed development of an old oyster factory on the water in East Marion, which is actually a big issue right now.
Describe what the issue is.
Well, there was initially a proposal for a big resort there. And East Marion is a very small community. It's on an isthmus. It's a very thin spit of land that goes out to Orient. So there are all kinds of issues with groundwater, saltwater intrusion, septic systems, all kinds of things down there that are really critical environmental issues. And traffic. They have this really popular lavender farm there that backs up the traffic on the one road in and out on a regular basis. So they've been active for many years. But the other towns on the North Fork, I'm sorry, the other hamlets on the North Fork didn't really have civic associations historically. And Matatuck, it feels like just a couple of years ago, but it might be more like five or so. Mm-hmm. Matatuck formed a civic association. And then New Suffolk always had one. New Suffolk is a very small community. But Cutchogue and Southold hadn't had one. And there hadn't really been one in Greenport either. And just in the past couple of years, groups of citizens in all three of those hamlets have really gotten together and started community information meetings and whatnot. I think probably Southold Peconic is very organized, and Cutchogue and Greenport are finding their footing. But it's a really striking amount of people who've really coalesced around the idea of preserving the community that's here in the last couple of years. It's amazing to watch.
The language that's usually used is maintaining the community character of the residential communities. Can you describe what they mean by that?
Well, growing up hearing that phrase, I always bristled at it a little bit because it seemed a little xenophobic, I guess, or possibly, you know, they wanted to keep people who didn't look like us out of here. But community character, I mean, in light of all this development, really at this point means just preserving a sense that there are people who live here full time and their kids go to the school here and they volunteer for community organizations and you see them in the post office and can have a conversation with them about how Bob is doing after surgery up the street and, you know, if Sally had her birthday party. That's really, I think, the essence of what people love about here. And you don't have that a lot of places. And, you know, as we become an enclave for the very wealthy, we're going to lose that. There was one woman who spoke at a public hearing on this affordable housing development in Cutchogue a couple of weeks ago. She lives in Amagansett on the South Fork. And she said, if you don't build affordable housing on the North Fork, you'll have no community left. And then she said very ominously, I'm speaking to you from your future. And she's right. Mm. We have to learn very quickly the lessons that they learned down there, that they're still learning down there, but that they needed to learn, you know, probably 10 years ahead of us.
What did they learn, actually, and how did they implement that learning?
Well, there are two towns down there. There have been a lot of comprehensive planning processes that have gone on down there. And, you know, that's just sort of deciding what you want the future of your town to look like. A lot of that involves zoning changes. And the South Fork towns were very effective at implementing those quite some time ago. Everyone's been less than perfectly effective at affordable housing, but East Hampton is a really good model. But the need is so great. You can do everything and still the need is so great. Those are the big ones I see. I think they've been less successful at traffic, but you can't control who decides they want to drive out to Montauk on a Saturday morning. One thing I found kind of amusing, I often have to do a drive out to Montauk the day before the 4th of July weekend to drop off the papers for the next month.
Just talk about what that means.
Oh, yeah. I'm delivering the newspapers. So the East End Beacon is delivered to about 30 or 40 stops on the South Fork.
Give yourself a minute and talk about East End Beacon.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a subscriber, but I don't think everybody listening to this radio show is.
I founded it as a news website in 2013, committed to environmental and social justice, the arts, and diverse communities on the East End. Working to live up to that mission every day, shoestring staff. So trying to live up to that is a full-time job. And I launched a print edition in the spring of 2017. So that's in its fifth year now. And it's distributed at about 80 spots on the North and South Forks.
And you're one of the distributors.
Yeah. I used to work on the South Fork, so I had to drive out there before holiday weekends every day to work. And the trade parade, which they call all the cars going out there to work in the morning and coming back in the evening, has just gotten unbearably out of control in recent years. And, you know, I left New Suffolk on the North Fork at 9 a.m. and I figured I wouldn't get home till 9 p.m. Mm. And the South Fork is moving here.
They'd have to acknowledge at some stage that that was a mistake because they're going to find out that they're moving to everything they moved away from.
Well, you know, if you only see your second home on the weekends or one weekend a month or whatnot, maybe you'll never realize. I don't know. Houses that are sitting empty and using resources, we can't legislate that away. That's going to be part of what's here. But we can put some guidelines in place.
So the problem is that there's no control over the size of the houses, which apart from just a community character thing and looking ugly, as you say, the jagged teeth.
Yeah, I mean, they have to meet the setbacks of the lot. But, you know, they can also appeal that to the zoning board. And the problem with appealing things to the zoning board is one of the big arguments that people make is that what they're doing is in character with the current neighborhood. And once the character of the current neighborhood changes, that calculus changes in front of the zoning board. So if it was in character with the neighborhood 5 years ago, the neighborhood's changed.
Yes. And so what they're doing now is in character with this changed character. It's a hard fact to face that now what wasn't once acceptable has become acceptable because things have changed.
That is the legal argument that they use. But the zoning board is wise to it and why the zoning board has come out in favor of this new legislation, because their eyes are open to it, but legally they can't. At the moment, they don't have the ability to do much about it.
So what are we expecting then on Tuesday? There'll be another hearing?
The hearing is closed. So there will probably be a vote from the town board. There will be a vote on Tuesday. We'll have something on our website on Wednesday as you're listening to this. You can check out eastendbeacon.com to find out if it passed. I believe it has a lot of support on the town board.
And the vote is to implement new rules for house size. Okay, so let's go back to my original question. Would you agree that a lot of these activities, the civic associations and the community associations and all these things, were not really either there or in as large numbers as they are now? Can you talk about whether you're seeing this more vigorous response, which I thought might be because I'm involved in an advocacy group, and maybe that's clouding my perspectives?
Yeah, my partner is involved in one of these groups as well. So I thought that was clouding my perspective. I'm seeing all this engagement, but maybe it's just there's more of it in my house at the moment. But I was talking to Bob DeLuca, the president of the group for the East End, and he was actually talking about what a wonderful thing these civic organizations that are coalescing are. And the group for the East End is helping lead training seminars for them on how local and state laws work with regard to land use. There's something called the State Environmental Quality Review Act, which big projects have to go through to make sure that they're not negatively impacting the environment.
That's CECRA for short.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I guess it doesn't really apply in Connecticut, but you should listen on this side of the sound as well. So he helped lead a training seminar with the Southhold Civic Group on that. But just like if you're a first time person who's engaging in a civic group, there's so much to learn about how to interact with local government. And, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years, so I take it for granted that people know how to do this. But, you know, when I was talking to Bob, I realized like just the simple things, or even just talking to you now, like what is the process of being heard about this? When are your comments entered into the record? When does it matter that they be entered into the record? How can people drive what the legislation is going to look like? Because local governments tend to be really responsive to community input.
Beth Young is talking about how civic engagement is increasing on the North Fork. This is North Fork Works on WPKN Radio.
You know, the people who are on these local boards walk down the street every day and have to face their constituents.
And they live here too. They have the same problems we do as residents. Absolutely. They're not just government officials, they're also residents.
Yeah, absolutely. So all these civic groups kind of meet together on a weekly basis. They formed a group called the North Fork Civics. They have their own separate website, and it's a coalition of all the civic associations in South Old Town.
Do you know how many there are altogether?
Let's see, Orion, East Marion, Greenport, South Old, Kreshag, Mattock, seven. Yes, there are seven.
Seven. Mattock Laurel was the first one, I believe, right?
I believe it might be more of the Orion Association. Actually, the New Suffolk Civic Association has been around a long time as well.
Mm-hmm.
In recent years, Mattock, in the time that I've been covering the North Fork extensively, Mattock is started the current wave.
Yeah, and it's also one of the bigger hamlets.
Yeah. And Mary Eisenstein, who's really done a lot of wonderful things for South Old, was instrumental in starting the Mattock one. She's being honored by the North Fork Environmental Council.
And she was then elected to the planning board, right?
Appointed, yes.
Appointed to the planning board. So that was continuous with her starting this group.
Yeah.
The Mattock Laurel Civic. So there are these seven civic associations, and they're grouped under the umbrella of North Fork Civics, even though they each have their own separate local agenda. But what is the benefit of them working under this umbrella? I don't know if umbrella is the right word.
Yeah, umbrella is a really good word. They want to present a united voice to the town when they're discussing policy changes or law changes. So, I mean, sometimes, if you have a group, an area where there are a lot of civic associations, you might find different groups have different priorities, different goals. They might be at odds with each other. But having one group that just says, all of the North Fork civics have come to a consensus on that, I think is really powerful. I'm not a member. I can't speak for myself, but just from hearing the way they communicate, I believe that's one of their primary goals. I think you mentioned this in your intro, there are a lot of very skilled people involved in this organization with decades of experience in urban planning, in architecture, and all these things that are really so crucial. And in seeing it somewhere else, seeing it implemented in San Francisco or upstate New York, or, just stepping one step outside of what we have here and seeing the way other communities have handled things is really a great thing to have. And we're really blessed to have people who've come out here and made this their home and want to take care of the place.
These are the people we were angry with for coming in and taking up our space. Some of those same people have brought with them this expertise and found a very welcoming place to implement this expertise.
I personally feel that the town could be a little more supportive of their efforts. And they may end up being more supportive. They might end up working better together. It's that they've just begun interacting with the town, and there's been a little bit of butting heads. But I think everyone wants the best for the community, and that's really what's going to guide it going forward. I think it's going to be very civil and very productive.
Can you give an example of what they might have butted heads about, or what a specific project or a specific? I know that there's been something, say, about traffic studies. Somebody with expertise in these things was saying that the traffic studies were old and out of date.
Yeah, Southwold did its comprehensive plan in-house, and it took a very long time, about 10 years. And in the time it took to write it, a lot of things ended up out of date. But in terms of what I'm aware of, that the Umbrella Civic Association group has gotten involved with, they've been very involved in the Big House legislation, and they've worked with the town on that. The town is taking the ball on that. The town has made a lot of revisions from their original proposal and really watered it down, but they've worked collaboratively and have come up with something. The other thing that they have been pushing the town to do is have an implementation committee for the comprehensive plan. So community groups that are involved with taking some of the elements of that plan and drafting the code or doing, the things that are specified as needs in the plan and just putting it into use in the real world. And I think members of the town board they're kind of used to having to wrangle a lot of people's different opinions together. And their argument is that, I can't really speak for them, but it seems like they think it's just one more layer that will make it more difficult to get things done. The people in the civics are pretty can-do people from what I've seen. And I think they want to make sure things get done as well. So I think they just need to see eye to eye on that. the people who would like to be part of this implementation committee have a wealth of expertise, mm-hmm. and they're offering their services free of charge, and it's a gift, and the town doesn't see it that way.
And again, those people live here too, so they it's self-interest. Yeah. I mean, it's not that they're noble people for not charging for their professional services, it's that they live here too, and they want to see these things implemented for their own reasons. Their interests are joined with that the larger community. Other than the civic association, and we haven't talked about Riverhead.
There's a brand new civic association in Riverhead as well, formed last month. Heart of Riverhead Civic.
And what are their issues?
Well, downtown Riverhead is undergoing really massive redevelopment right now. So there's all kinds of changes afoot. They allow 5-story buildings there. They just got a $10 million downtown revitalization grant from New York State to help rebuild some areas of downtown. The developers of the Aquarium and the Hyatt and the Star Ballroom catering facility are going to be working with the town on a big new town square project across from the Suffolk Theater. There's a tremendous amount of redevelopment going on in downtown Riverhead, and they've never, to my knowledge, had a civic association there. There are civic associations in other parts of Riverhead, but they're very rural parts like Jamesport or Calverton. The people who formed this, like, they put on their thinking caps one day and said, oh my God, like, this is crazy that there isn't a civic group representing this place. So a lot of people came to their first meeting. I didn't make it to their second one, but they're in the mix too. And the group for the East End is helping them as well. So.
Mm-hmm, I see. So other than the civic association, let's talk also about some of the existing more incumbent associations like North Fork Environmental Council,
yeah.
or the North Fork Audubon. Those groups, from what I understand, there's also not only, there's always been engagement, but now the engagement includes collaboration and partnershipping with these civic associations, informally or formally, I don't know. Are you seeing that?
I am not too aware of the internal goings on of those groups, but I do know they're both very passionate and really good people involved with them. I think they've been a little hamstrung from their effectiveness in the past just because they're all volunteer organizations. And another group, like the group for the East End, gets a lot of funding from South Fork sponsors, and they're able to do a lot more because they have a paid staff whose job it is to do these things that, you know, some brave volunteers are trying to do at other organizations. And both North Fork Audubon and the North Fork Environmental Council, actually, and also group for the, they all turned 50 this year. Mm. Which the year of the Clean Water Act, just after the first Earth Day, they were all formed at a time when the East End was facing very similar development pressures to the ones they're facing. Well, they were much lower scale, but just the first big box stores, things like that really spurred this. Also, they were, if you haven't been here a long time, you might not know there's not you, Hazel, but the listeners. There was talk about building a nuclear power plant in Jamesport. Around that time. Mm. And it's just stunning to think today that that was a possibility here.
But the idea that they're all 50 years old is giving them all reasons to celebrate, commemorate,
absolutely.
But also to combine or at least acknowledge each other.
Absolutely.
So that's some of that. I hadn't actually thought of it like that.
Yeah, that's a really good thing. I think they'll be a lot stronger together.
Yeah. And also, my impression is that there may just be generally more hearings at South Old Town than there used to be as another measure of engagement. Or you don't agree with that observation?
Well, I think that a lot of things that there might have been hearings on have not happened in the last couple of years because of the pandemic and the difficulties of having public hearings when you couldn't have a public gathering. They were a little late to get to Zoom. And so I think that has more bearing on it. I mean, I remember historically going to a lot of hearings in Southfield and not really going to them in the past couple of years. So mm-hmm. I would say they're kind of catching up for lost time.
Yeah, but any other signs of this engagement, cross-group, cross-entity engagement that you might be seeing or hearing about?
I know that everyone I talk to on the street, and I seem to end up talking to people every time I walk down the street, everyone I talked to, that's all they're thinking about, is the way this place is changing and how to stop it from changing. So I think it's very much on everyone's mind. And I think the process of connecting everybody is really just beginning, but it has a lot of potential. It's exciting.
Yeah. Perhaps you'll be writing about these things as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think we pretty much covered everything that I was hoping to cover and more. So now you have this new perch for your reporting, the Uber, your Uber career.
Well, I've been driving for them part-time on the weekends for a few years now. And I learn a lot. I learn a lot about where I live from seeing it through other people's eyes.
Especially if you go all the way to Montauk each time.
Well, I try to stay on the North Fork. There are a lot of Airbnbs here.
That's not going to go away. And that's enforcement continues to be a problem on the North Fork.
Yeah. It's very enforcement is very resource intensive. And even like just the building department alone is so backlogged with all the development. They don't have the staff to make a lot of the things that are on the books happen.
Just again, speaking of, I guess, with the full disclosure of my involvement in Save Mattituck Inlet Group, we have offered, or at least we have talked about, trying to find ways to help the town because they are so under-resourced. They all have too many projects, and that's why projects take such a long time to come to any kind of fruition or completion. So we've said, what can we do? Internally, we've certainly talked about that. What can we do to make things easier for them? I don't know that we've come to any great conclusions, but I think basically we see the town as our ally as well as sometimes our opposition, you know?
Yeah, we do all have to work together.
Yeah. I think there's something quite interesting and hopeful about this, given all the other tremendous opposition and antagonism that we see in all the rest of the society, immediate, you know, local and larger society. It's good to see people working together. And that might also be a post-COVID thing, or maybe started during COVID when people maybe had more tolerance for each other because everybody was undergoing change. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm not given to positive thinking, so it's unusual to be saying any of these things. But
the place is going to change. We're going to have to come to terms with some of that.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is but one of the ways we're coming to terms. Oh, I see. You're saying things are going to change. Things are going to get worse in some ways. But we also have this other source of strength, which is our working community. In unison community. Yeah. Well, that's a positive way to end our conversation. So thank you very much, Beth Young, for talking to us again, sharing your very unique perspective, now adding Uber to it. I'm delighted to have talked to you again, to have heard you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Beth Young, veteran reporter and owner-founder of East End Beacon, talking about how civic engagement is increasing on the North Fork as an antidote to the pressures of development. You can hear North Fork Works right here on the first Wednesday of the month at this time and at any other time you choose on hazelkahn.com as podcast. Thank you for listening to WPKN. I'm Hazel Kahn. Thank you.